Yeah, it's time to parlay, time to win a little money. Deegan and Juice with Kylan and Stucky. I know you got a chalk, but it's time for the teaser. This is how we do it when it's football season. Ayy, Kylan and Stucky, yeah. Kylan and Stucky, woo.
What's up, Degenerate Nation? Welcome to Degen and Juice, episode 29. I'm Stucky, and with me, as always, is Colin Wilson. When I was itching to get to a Royal Rumble preview, which we're going to have to make you wait for because that is not priority, but I did promise him I'd give him time for that. What's going on, Colin?
I'm having a good night here. We got Arkansas winning a double overtime basketball game on the road, which is like, I think it's their first road win of the season. And because we had a victory over Oklahoma earlier in the year, we're pretty much a lock in the SEC to make the tournament if we just kind of play it out and play 500 ball. And then we got Chung and Tenny Sandgren here going on in the Australian Open, which I'm really excited about. May have threw a few parlays on Fade and Chung here tonight, so I can't wait to get into that.
Yeah, it's a huge win for Arkansas. And I mean, that was a huge game for either both teams, you know, especially that's a, you know, that Georgia really needed that game. They can still get in the tournament, but that's a big loss for them. And as you said, a big win because those road wins in conference are huge. Speaking of tennis, Sandgren, we have our resident ATP tennis expert, Daniel Scotty. I call him Scotty. It's weird for me to say Daniel. What's going on, Dan?
What's up, buddy? How's everything?
Good. You finally picked the winner in the ATP last week, and it got voided.
Yeah, Cilic.
That was not brutal. So Cilic. Plus five gets voided in. It was already locked up.
Oh yeah.
In the fifth set, and Nadal retires, and it gets voided. I had a future on Stan Wawrinka to win the Aussie Open and hedge some of it with Nadal, and he wouldn't retire then. So, you know, he had to just go and walk through the rest of the final, whatever. But I would have liked my hedge money back, which was significant. But no. But last night, yeah, he retires. So that was a brutal beat. But you're on Mr. Tennis Sandgren tonight, right?
Yeah.
Along with Colin?
Yeah, I'm on Mr. Sandgren.
Yeah, we tipped that if you read our preview. It definitely was too high. It's a crazy story. He's like he's like a challenger dude that's from Tennessee. Now people are like digging up his tweets about like the alt-right movement, and
that's ridiculous.
he used to have like long hair, and he's kind of cleaned himself up, but yeah, he's playing just so free. It's been an insane Australian Open. What are your thoughts? Is Federer winning this thing no matter what?
Yeah, I think Roger's got this. But first, on tennis, could you imagine being like a career journeyman, making a quarterfinal, and on the other side of the net there being like a next-gen player? Like, you're never going to have an opportunity like that ever again in your life. Like, do you realize how sick that is?
Yep.
This is like being on the Hooters tour in golf, and then like you're getting paired up against Tiger Woods coming down, you know, in the Masters of a Grand Slam. But you've been on the Hooters tour your entire life.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's crazy to see him make this type of run. He's playing really aggressive, and he's also playing, you know, he looks like the moment's not too big, which is really crazy because he's never been any type of moment like this. Like, in order to, he recovered in that fifth set against Team after Team won a ridiculous tiebreaker.
Yeah,
he
I thought it was and still won. That.
Yeah, I didn't think he could recover. So I think it's going to be a really good match tonight between him and Chung, and I think that the moment, whoever's up, you're going to see some nerves tonight because with the semis on the horizon, and you're going to start, I think, to see both of these players think about what they could accomplish. How about, you know, speaking of Chung, when he beat Djokovic, was a thrilling match, especially since I had Chung. What do you think about Djokovic? You know, is this the beginning of the end, or is he going to make a recovery like Roger and like Nadal did? I mean, he's so reliant on his movement and defense that, you know, he's never going to have the serve that Roger did, and, you know, but can he reinvent his game, or is he going to be dealing with injuries and not, you know, top three, maybe top 10 fringe for a little bit and then fade away? What do you think?
It's a good question, dude. I really don't know. I think time's going to have to tell that one because of what you said about like Roger being able to reinvent his game with the serve. Like, it's a lot easier to do that when you're like able to get quick points like that. Novak's game, like you said, And it was always so dependent on timing and in addition to the defense. And like that was what really looked off for me again in that Chung match and even pretty much every match he's played so far. Just like doesn't look like he's striking the ball crisp. Like the when he would make errors on the backhand, it would like sail, like kind of just like loft in the air and sail out like by feet. You know what I mean? Like it just he didn't have control of the ball. And like for somebody like Djokovic, like he always had the most feel for shots, whether it be with the forehand slice or, you know, his backhand slice and just both his strokes, like you know, he always hit the crispest ball. So, like, it's weird to how can he reinvent that if he doesn't have that part of his game? The margins are, you know, very fine for him.
Yeah, I would. It's one of those things that I think people are more hesitant to write people off because of what we saw with Roger Nadal. But I think it's a different case with Djokovic, and I'll be interested to see if he decides to get surgery. He can't keep playing with that the elbow like that. But
yeah,
I don't know.
Also, don't forget about Nadal. Like Nadal's case was like I think more unique than Roger's. Like Roger, when he like when there were doubts about Roger, he never really had like a consistent stretch of time where he was like losing matches. You know what I mean? Like it was more so just like questions with Rafa. Like Rafa was losing like every match he played, if you guys remember, like in 2015 and like late 2014. No, it was 2015 into 2016. And like that was bizarre because like I remember watching him play and there was just zero, I couldn't visualize in my mind how he could come back from what I was seeing. It just like looked that bad. So, like, to see him playing the way he is now, like, you know, retirement aside, he's the past year he's played at such a high level, arguably at the level that he was playing at, in like, you know, 2013, 2012. So, I don't know. If he can, you know, that gives me hope for a guy like Novak to potentially come back from this. He may not have to reinvent his game. He might just need, you know, some time off and you know, confidence goes a long way in the sport. We all know that.
Yeah, I mean, to the... Those are fair points. And to the Nadal lovers out there, this is what happens when he actually has to play someone in a hard court slam. He's on the ground on the side of the court getting carried off. The last year he gets the hard court slam and plays challenger people all through the draw. Sorry, had to get that out there. before we let you go, watch some tennis, play tennis. You want to give a, you know, by the way, if anyone hasn't signed up yet, make sure you sign up for the Super Bowl for the Action Network, become a pro subscriber. It's literally $5.99 a month for the entire year. Would be worth it just for the tennis, I promise you, the amount of work we both put in, but it's you get everything. The interesting thing, and thank you to everyone who subscribed, it's pretty much about 80, 90% positive feedback and 10 to 20% negative feedback on, oh, you have to charge, which, you know, you're always going to expect that in life. We have to pay for it somehow. The funny thing is I was listening to Erica Nardini and the Prez on Mad Money tonight, and they were saying, you know, how do you actually, you know, have this platform and sell it without actually, you know, having people believe that they're being sold something? And, you know, Portnoy came out and said, we actually are very outward, you know, we're very outward and outspoken about the fact that we are selling you something. There's ads all over. We have to tell you, we tell everyone, go buy this, go buy that to keep us alive. Otherwise, we might not be here. You know, we don't have that. We don't have advertisers. We don't want to have. There's two different kind of ways that you can do this. But the way that we're going is it's right now. Sign up for Super Bowl. It's $5.99 a month. You're going to have all the coverage for every sport, including tennis. Which means me on our last question, Dan. What are some of the things? Just you know, very high level. We'll continue to get more detailed and can try and help people understand how to handicap tennis. But just what are one or two things, or two to three things that you like to look for? Or you would recommend to people that are looking to get into possibly betting tennis, which I think is one of the, you know, most inefficient markets out there.
Yeah, I think that I heard this quote, you know, a few years back, and it really stuck with me throughout the years of betting tennis, that more matches are lost than they are won. So for me, like, you know, really high level on this, or, you know, take a step back, there's just so much value in tennis because I don't think there's any value in favorites. Very rarely is there value in favorite, but there's so much more value in an underdog because it's more so the psychological battle that a guy is going to face on the court, you know, just as much as it is who he's physically playing, you know, in the match. A guy's going to battle himself. And you see it all the time when certain guys, what do I look out for? I really look out for how a guy's feeling mentally because these guys, and good players, go through stretches where they'll just drop matches, you know what I mean? And like they'll still be priced because the market makes them have to be priced at such a, you know, minus 400, minus 500 favorites, that you kind of just know that it's more of a pick 'em match. So that's the type of stuff I look out for. I think tennis, once you start to really hone in on the certain players and the clash of styles, that's just like, you don't find that in any other sport. It's one-on-one. So it's, you know, this versus that. It's just, it's the most beautiful sport, in my opinion, maybe next to soccer. That's another conversation.
I spent a year trying to cap Fognini, and it was like the worst year of my life because that guy's head, like, you could never find out.
Yeah, but it's like entertaining. It's like, you know, it's like a soap opera, and I really, that's how I kind of look at it, because it's like, you know these players and their styles, but you also know their personalities. Like, you get to see them kind of like, you know, progress over a year, go through highs and lows. It's like it's a sports soap opera.
You know how I know Colin's from the South? Because he pronounces it Fognini.
Fognini. Fognini. Come on, Fognini. You got to do the hand thing, the Italian hand thing.
And I mean, one of the reasons that it's the most inefficient market, which I think women's tennis is you're not going to get, you can't bet as much as you want on it. So the books don't really care, especially, they're not going to spend all their time setting women's tennis lines, but they handle that with limit control, right? You can go in and bet 100 times more on an NFL game than you can on a women's tennis game. So they're not really going to get hurt by a women's tennis bet. So thanks, Scotty. We'll have you more on. Make sure you check out his stuff on the ATP. Go root for tennis and bring him home for us.
All right, guys. Talk to you soon.
Cheers.
Bye. Bye.
All right. So, Colin, let's move on. Before we get to your Royal Rumble, which I know you want to get to and you're itching to get to, and before we go watch tennis, let's get into some NFL. Now, next week, we will get into more of college football. Some of the Colin's going to have a piece out that comes out either late this week or early next week on, you know, a more in-depth look at 2018. I mean, some Heisman, you know, some schedule things, more look at the futures and just general who's coming back, who's leaving. So we'll have a follow-up to that piece on the podcast next week. We'll also do Super Bowl props, like I said. But for this week, let's get into our initial breakdown of the Super Bowl. But before we do that, we have to look back at the past weekend. Jacksonville nailed that game. I feel bad for the Jags, but they got too timid. There was a couple circumstances where maybe fourth and one, a lot of people were saying they should have went for it. I disagree with that. I mean, they were the number one pass defense. They relied on their defense all year. But some of the play calls, man, I mean – in the second half, it was just first down dive. And then it became so predictable. And then you're putting Bortles in second and long and third and long. And that just wasn't working. The Jags got there.
Yeah. Playing to lose the game. That's all they did. From the second that they got the lead, they were playing to lose the game.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing for me is that and I tweeted about this. I said that the Eagles at the last, there was 29 seconds left. They got the ball at the 20-yard line at their own 20. And they went down, they were up two touchdowns. They went down the field in four plays and got to Minnesota's 20. And on the other hand, you had Jacksonville, who had 58 seconds left at their own 25. They had 30 more seconds.
Two timeouts.
And they just, you know, they kneeled on it. You could possibly say they have a gripe about some of the calls, but I don't think any of them were game-changing. They had the formula, but... you know, ultimately, you have to play aggressive and very close to perfect in order to win in Foxborough. Now, they had the formula, but then you have to actually keep executing. They did it so well in the beginning, but ultimately, they let New England get the 21. And if you do over 21, if they do that historically, they're going to win. Did you take anything else from that game?
I don't understand why some of these teams let New England crawl back into the game. I mean, it reminded me of last year where, Atlanta kind of went to a predictable game plan once they got a 28-3 lead. A couple breaks go New England's way. They climb back in. Jacksonville gets this, you know, multi-score lead, and they start going extremely, you know, vanilla, and they ran the exact same play on first down. Every series, they ran the exact same play on first down, second down, third down, and, you know, I let New England climb back in the game. They're going to get a couple calls. Tom's going to do his thing. And I don't understand why all these teams don't keep their foot on the pedal and get a victory against New England. I was live tweeting the live line. You know, when it got to pick for the Patriots, I was like, I don't know. You know, I haven't seen the Jags let up yet. But once it got to the Patriots +4 and the Jags started going vanilla on their play calling, and they started playing scared, I knew that it was time to jump on the Patriots side because, you know, they're going to climb back into the game. I think the same thing is going to happen here in the Super Bowl. I mean, we can talk about the NFC Championship. But I retweeted out your column that you posted immediately after the games on Sunday night. It was a fantastic piece, and I think the exact same thing is going to happen here. I think we're going to get a little bit of an Eagles lead, and I think we're going to have a comeback by Tom, terrific Tom here, and there's going to be chances to live bet it.
Yeah, I mean, but back to that what Jacksonville also did on the defensive end, they went more zone after they had the lead. And one of the keys, number one, you can't play zone against New England, right? Brady will pick it apart. But one of the reasons that you can continue to play man, an aggressive man, is you need to, you know, maintain the lead. And that allows you to play aggressive on defense. Now, some teams will say, oh, I'm scared, and not do that. But that's one of the reasons why in the five times that the Patriots have lost at home or on a neutral field in the playoffs, it's only happened five times. They're 18-3 at home, 5-2 on a neutral. They've lost to Eli twice in the Super Bowl, Flacco twice at home, and Mark Sanchez at home. In those five games, they, at the end of the first quarter, the combined score was their opponent's 36, New England 6. And then against Jacksonville, they led 3-0. So in those, you know, that would be the sixth game where they would have 9 total points. They didn't score any touchdowns. And all those teams, they stayed aggressive on defense, and you don't get behind, and you should have the mindset, all right, if they get behind, if a receiver gets behind us, fine. You know, we have the lead, we have a cushion. Instead of saying, oh, we have the lead, let's just play zone, make sure no one gets behind us, and then Brady will just go up and down the field. The 3rd and 18 was huge, but Jacksonville was there. They had the formula. They just psychologically panicked, I think, in a lot of different ways.
They even won the coin toss, right? They even prevented after I saw that coin toss, I was like, okay, we got a chance here. But once they started letting up, I knew that they were in trouble. Even with Gronk out, now I don't know what's going to happen with Gronk. I haven't seen the latest. I know he's still under concussion protocol, and I'm not sure how long that's going to be until they announce what his status is for the game. But even without Gronk, Brady was able to pick up a part.
Yeah, it's. I think Gronk's presence will be absolutely enormous. Big tight ends have really, you know, dominated the Eagles this year. Their linebackers struggle. New England's linebackers, by the way, are horrendous. We'll get into props next week, but there are some really good matchups on the Eagles side. We're gonna have just tons of prop coverage as well. I don't know if they're all released yet, but they should be released.
Not quite, but we.
By tonight, I would imagine. Maybe they'll buy them.
Yeah, they'll definitely be up by the weekend. We can talk about them. And I'm certainly deep diving already on them. I was already tweeting about Gatorade colors from past Patriots victories. So,
Good to see. Good to see you're getting into the hard hitting analysis.
Hey, somebody already did the Dilly Dilly article, so I don't have to do that research anymore. So let me throw one at you since you're the Sports Jeopardy guy. You made a tweet about the bottom line, the ESPN bottom line, really having some hard cracking stats at the bottom with Brady wearing white and going 3-0 wearing white, and he's going to wear white this weekend. The other stat on the bottom line on ESPN was 12 of the 13 last Super Bowl winners wore white. Can you name the team that didn't wear white? I knew this one off the top of my head.
The team that didn't wear white that won last, the Super Bowl last going 13. Back to 2000. Wasn't it Pittsburgh?
It was the Packers beating Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
So that was I thought that was a good one. I saw that immediately. I knew because Aaron Rodgers, that was his.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Okay. Rest of them wore white. So.
Well, I mean, I guess we just have to bet the Patriots because they're going to wear white, and there's definite causality there. But, yeah, in the other game, you know, I had the Jags. I had the under, which was but got there. And I couldn't have been more wrong on the Vikings. And I started to get this little fear because I was like, this is not what I, you know, this is not how I usually bet, you know, because I started to hear all these things locally. It's like, go ahead, make us the underdog. And, you know, I played football my whole life and I was like, man, the Eagles are just really buying into this whole underdog thing. And which I think is going to apply over the next 2 weeks. But I, you know, having said that, I did not anticipate Nick Foles coming out there and playing like John Elway against a historically great Vikings third down defense. Well, I think he was 10 for 10 on third down at one point. He's hitting, you know, coffin corners, dropping it into a bucket on flea flickers against the Vikings. I mean,
they'll roll him out. But you know what? He made some pocket passes too. He was under pressure within the tackles and still was dodging things and making passes down the field. So, I mean, hat, you know, tip of the cap to what is it? What are they calling him around your parts? They're calling him Big Dick Nick. Is that what
Big
I heard?
Big Dick Nick. Yeah, Big Dick Big, Nick.
Yes. Yeah, so tip of the cap to Big Dick Nick.
Yeah, Big Dick Nick. I mean, one of the biggest plays also was, I mean, the pick six changed momentum. But then when Rhodes went out and they hit him deep, just a very aware play call and a great throw. They, you know, but that was a shocking result. I don't think anyone saw that coming. I mean, people could have seen an Eagles win, but in that fashion, just completely shocking.
Yeah, that was, you know, I said I was going to live bet, and I did. I got down, and I was happy with the Jags cover and then playing the Patriots live. And, you know, once I got to the Vikings game, I was like, okay, when are they going to turn it on? And, you know, they had that drive. I thought they were going to be able to score, and they turned it over once again down in their own red zone. So that was it. I mean, the live betting was shut off, and the Eagles put up so many points so fast. It was, but good for them. Good for Philly. I think we're going to have a good Super Bowl here, and looking forward to breaking into it more next week. Although I already know that I'm trying to parlay stuff with the Patriots, and I haven't decided on the side yet.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be on the Eagles. I don't think I'm going to get 7. I'm going to be more heavy. I won't bet the total on this game. I already know that. I'll be more. This is my favorite time to bet props. I spent a lot of time doing it. I remember one Super Bowl, I had so many props on Danny Woodhead and the Patriots, and he just went off. I was at this party, and I told everyone to bet Woodhead props. It was awesome. But, yeah, so I'll have way more invested in the props. And my favorite is that people will bet, like, they'll put minus 102, minus 103, and they'll bet on the actual coin toss. I'm like, do you realize it's a 50-50? But whatever, you know, it's a Super Bowl. You can have fun with it. So, yeah, I mean, what I think it boils down to next week is that, and I wish I would have bet the 7 on the look ahead line. I think Gronk played a part of that, and then also seeing how well Foles played also played a part in that now being 5, 5.5. Uh-huh. Cook, but here's the thing. Philly they have enormous matchup advantages on both sides of the ball. They're going to be able to gash New England in their running game. New England's linebackers and safeties are absolutely horrific against the run. I mean, Van Noy is bad, man. He is bad. He gets ran. Blunt's going to have a big day. Ajayi, they're going to gash. What the Patriots are 30th in the NFL in 5-plus yard runs, giving up 10-plus yard runs. And the Eagles, number one in the NFL in 10-plus yard runs, number one in the NFL in 20-plus yard runs. They're going to gash them. Their defensive line led the NFL in pressures this year. That's how you beat New England in the postseason. You got to hit Brady. You know, the New England's offensive line played great considering they were playing Jacksonville last week. Both their tackles, you know, filled in admirably. But Philly's going to have time to throw. They're going to be able to run the ball at will. They're going to get pressure on Brady. You know, it's going to be another close game. New England's, here's a trivia question. What's New England's largest Super Bowl win in the 7 they've played, in the 5 they've won?
Ooh. Have they won over 7 points by 5? Over was that over?
They've never. The only time they won by more than 4 points was last year in overtime by 6. So their biggest win in the 5 Super Bowls they've won happened when the game was tied at the end of regulation and they trailed 28-3. They beat the Eagles by 3 as 7-point underdogs. They beat the Panthers by 3. As 7-point underdogs. They beat the Rams by 3 as 13-point underdogs. And then they beat the Seahawks by 3, and they should have lost, or 4, whatever. I mean, they were at the goal line. They won by 3 or 4. So, you know, they generally win Super Bowls by 3 or 4, and they give us close games. You would think that Belichick with 2 weeks to prep and how great they've been, but really they lost 2 Super Bowls to the Giants, right? And then they could have easily lost to Seattle. If Pete Carroll wasn't worried about his next piece of gum and he ran the ball, they lose that Super Bowl. And then if Matt Ryan doesn't get sacked, they lose that Super Bowl.
There's 3 Super Bowls thanks to Vinatieri and Malcolm Butler. So,
yeah, Tuck rule against Oakland, they never get there. So, right. I mean, this team, credit to them for how dominant they've been. Really, it's a lot of it, though, is they've played in a really shitty division for 17, 18 years. And as a result, they played in 7 Super Bowls. This is a mind-blowing stat. They played in 7 Super Bowls. And in order to get to 7 Super Bowls, well, now they're 8th. They will now have played, so let me correct that statement. This will be their 8th Super Bowl, and they've played in 8 Super Bowls since 2000 while only playing 7 road playoff games. And in those 7 road playoff games, they're 3-4. So they just get, you know, they run away with their division, and they have home field. They usually have a bye, and that's been their formula. But they don't blow out teams in these Super Bowls.
I think you got to get LeGarrette Blount on your props card for first TD. It's probably not going to be that great of a price, but, I mean, that just the odds of him pushing it in for the Eagles, unless somebody busts one for a 30-yard, it just seems like something's going to have to be a part of your card to start it off.
I'll give you a tip on who I'll be heavily invested in from a prop perspective. Nelson Aguilar, who is top 5 across the board in the NFL this year as a slot receiver. Targets, target percentage, receiving, touchdowns. He actually led the NFL in touchdowns as a slot receiver by about 2. He had 8. He's going to play one of the weaknesses of the Patriots' defense. Patriots have 2 great man corners on the outside, but in Butler and Gilmore made a fantastic play last week. But they were really weak in the slot. So, you know, last week they were going with Eric Rowe, who, by the way, used to be on Philly. They know a lot of his tendencies. He's terrible. I've seen him. Jonathan, he really struggles with receivers in space. I just don't get it. I don't know why the Patriots keep trying to play him. Jonathan Jones played, you know, for him when he was injured during the year, Eric Rowe. But, you know, he gave up, I think, over about a 92 quarterback rating. They struggle in the slot, and the Eagles love going to Aguilar. Aguilar is going to have a huge day because you're going to have to use the Patriots are going to have to use their safeties on Ertz, and but their linebackers are terrible over the middle, so they have a terrible slot corner. Their linebackers are just horrendous, so I think that they're going to get mismatches with the linebackers. They're going to have Aguilar crossing, and I think he's going to have a big day. Is that it? You got nothing there? You know, I don't.
Let's see. Well, I mean, the numbers aren't out yet. I got to see what the price is, but definitely I will take your advice and I'll have some money down on that prop. I know I'm going to get crazy into the flow of the game, as in, like, there's usually no Patriots second quarter points. For some reason, they always seem to come after the adjustments come after half. So I know there's going to be a lot of quarter and half situational props I'll probably be hitting, and probably something in the kicking and the special teams I'll be hitting too. But the Aguilar one, very good.
Who did you want to win? Like, just from the Jets, so Eagles, Vikes, who cares? But from a build-up and, you know, because I was talking about this with my pops, I was like, you know, everyone's like, I have Patriots, people have Patriots fatigue, you hear that. But they always give us great Super Bowls. And, isn't it better that because 2 weeks is too long, by the way, the Super Bowl should be this week. But, I mean, I feel like the Jags-Eagles for the next 2 weeks would be horrendous, right?
Yeah, that would have been pretty terrible. I mean, I would have been fascinated with the story from the Jags' perspective of Bortles in a playoff and Foles in a playoff or anything like that. But, I mean, you know, everything, the ratings would have suffered, the attention level would have suffered, and then if you would have had a blowout in the game, say, you know, like one of those, you know, I think, what, Seattle and Denver, it was like a 22-point game pretty quick, right? And so that would have made it a pretty bad Super Bowl. I mean, I think you want a good Super Bowl. I think you want what happened last year. And I think we have very much have the potential to have that this year. But, you know, I guess I'm happy because with the NFC, we've had a problem marking who was going to win this thing the whole time. And, I mean, you told me to quit looking over Philly the entire year. I had the Vikings pegged. And so I'm just glad that we got probably a pretty good Super Bowl going in. Sad that the Vikings and that home field advantage and that horn are not going to be blown. But, you know. At least we got a good matchup and a good tight line.
Yeah, I mean, I told you to don't look over Philly, but I thought the Vikings were going to win and bet the Vikings. So I haven't been – that was probably the worst call I've ever made in an NFL playoff game. So anyway, much more NFL coverage to come. Check out Action Network, both of us on Twitter. Podcast next weekend, we'll really make sure that we dive deep into the props and have some good nuggets for you guys. We're also doing about like 100 articles on Action Network that we're all working on, and a lot of the guys on Fantasy Labs are involved too, and they get really deep in that stuff, so there'll be some good content there. So now that we have Arkansas basketball covered, we have tennis covered, and we had another guest. We covered the NFL divisional round and touched on the NFL Super Bowl. now that we've done all of that, and if anyone's still listening, we'll give Colin his platform to talk through Royal Rumble. Now, the only thing I'll say, because I'm probably going to let you ramble for most of this, is I've seen you can bet on this, but isn't it like the people on? I saw. Look, I don't know anything about this, but didn't like there was a guy that was like posting what will happen because how is this still a thing where you can bet on it?
Yeah,
the limit's like $4.
So to break it down for those of you that don't know, you can bet on a scripted event. WWE is completely scripted, and
you just ruined some guy in a basement.
Oh yeah, there's some mark out there that's gonna be really pissed off at me, but. So it's completely scripted. We know who the winner is. And the thing is with the lines, they kind of float. They'll be posted 2 or 3 days before, and they'll float these crazy numbers. Now, I know there's limits on them, and Five Dimes does limit you to $50, $100. I was able to place a $200 bet on a pay-per-view last year. So it's really low limits when you compare it to something like that I would normally do for like a football game. But it's still fun, and some of these pay-per-views happen on nights where there isn't anything else going on. Sunday night, truly for me, there's nothing else going on in the sporting world. And this is a pretty big one. So,
what you're saying is they release the lines before
around Friday,
what's scripted gets released, or does that not happen anymore?
So here's the timeline. So the pay-per-view is always on Sunday. The lines get posted around Friday on Five Dimes. Now, Paddy Power always has these out, always, like the entire year, they've got the lines out there. But most people don't have a Paddy Power account. But they'll be posted on Five Dimes, and then the numbers just move. And a $50 bet will move a 9-1, like to 45-1, or it'll move it to a heavy favorite. Like the lines are so loose that.
Since it's scripted. There's no such thing as value betting, right? So are you just saying that when you bet these before the script comes out, are you just betting for like, I want this wrestler, what is her, Triple H? Is that a wrestler's name?
That's a wrestler. Very good.
I want I'm a fan of Triple H, or I want Triple H to win. Or are you saying I think that they're going to script this, and that's what I'm betting towards, right?
Exactly. That is exactly. Okay, so if you think about it, if you bet on like the PGA Tour, you're usually taking around, I've seen people take 10 golfers. Some people take around 4 golfers, and they kind of sparse their money out and different, you know, in the value of what the line is. And I kind of do the same thing. So when the lines come out, I've already scripted it in my head. Like, I know what's going on. Like, I watch this. I have 2 sons. I watch this with my sons. I watch this growing up. I could tell you everything about wrestling, which, you know, is a little embarrassing. But you know what? I mean, I'm not your typical wrestling fan. I mean, but...
Doesn't every wrestling fan say that, though?
No, I've actually been to these live events. I mean, I've actually been like front row at some of these pay-per-views. I am not like the rest of the wrestling fans, but
Do you bring a sign like those people?
No, I used to when I was in college. When I was in college, I used to go to like WCW Nitro events. I'd go to Raw, and I'd go to like WrestleMania, and I'd bring signs. And I was really into it when I was in college.
So you spent your entire college career getting laid, right?
Oh, yeah, and I got laid all the time, too. Yeah, I mean, I had no problem. I mean, it was a really cool thing back in 1997,
1998. That's true. I forget that you're older than me, so it's
So, you know, when I was a kid, Ric Flair came on before Atlanta Braves baseball. So, you know, it was you know, hand-in-hand. So.
All right, so who's your favorite wrestler of all time?
Bret Hart, by far. He's Canadian. He was the best.
Is that Bret the Hitman Hart?
Bret the Hitman Hart from Calgary, yeah, Calgary.
I don't know how I know these names.
Yeah, you know all this, and you know what? This pay-per-view is in Philly. It's right down the road from you too. It's not at the Spectrum. It'll be you know where the Sixers play. But okay, so yeah, Bret Hart is my favorite of all time. But as far as the Royal Rumble goes, and as far as betting on WWE, what you're trying to do is you're trying to script the pay-per-view, and what you do is you just kind of catch some notes about what happened on the shows on Raw, SmackDown. You might want to do a Google search, maybe go search Reddit or go look at the thing they call Dirt Sheets. Kind of see what's happening in the business. And you can also see that there's also a WWE swerve going around all the time. Like, they're going to lead you to believe that this person's going to win it, and then somebody else wins. But they're always trying to prop up the next... They're always trying to tell a story for the next step. And so you can kind of, you know, these simple-minded guys that book this stuff and write the scripts, it's pretty easy to predict, right? Because this is aimed at 13-year-olds. This isn't aimed at people that have an education. This isn't aimed at people that can...
Unless you're Colin in college.
Right, unless you're Colin in college. So it's pretty easy to guess where the script's going to go. So if you're betting this, my advice is if you have a script in mind, think of two or three different outcomes and then try to get the best number on that wrestler. And if you see it and the number is just out of control, like say Roman Reigns, I think Roman Reigns is going to win and he's -900. Don't be laying $90 to win $10. That's ridiculous. It just takes a little bit of money to push him back down anyways. So write the script in your head, do just a little 5-10 minutes of research, and go ahead and try to get a really good number and then watch it move around and just check on it every, you know, when you wake up and have your breakfast or go to bed and check on, see where the lines are and try to have three or four wrestlers, going into the pay-per-view. And then what happens is the actual script itself is finalized 30 minutes before the pay-per-view. And you can tell because you'll go into Five Dimes and everything, the winner of the match will be like -99999.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the script's out.
It is only a half. It's only a half hour before it starts.
It's a half.
It used to be sooner? I feel like I read that. Or no?
There was this guy named Dolphin1424, and he got onto Reddit and Twitter, and he would post everything that happened.
I remember this.
He'd be like, you know, The Rock beats Jericho, wins the title, or he'd be like Stone Cold in a count out, you know, and then you could go bet this shit and make a whole bunch of free money.
And who was this guy? Was he a worker, a writer?
So they found out that he worked in the gorilla position. Now, the gorilla position is right before they come out of the curtain, you know, right before they come out. So he's the guy that, like, sprays their hair, like, dumps water on them, you know, because all wrestlers are wet. He's like, dumps water on them, and, like, he has access to the script. Like, he worked in the gorilla position before they all came out, and they finally put a lock on it. Like, nobody knows the script. Like, the wrestlers are being told the script, like, right as they, you know, are about to walk out. And, you know, they kind of have an idea of what's going to happen, but they don't know exactly how the ending is going to go down. So they really did a lock and key now about who knows about this. But still, these lines 30 minutes ahead of time are getting out. So really, you just kind of have in mind who you want to take.
We got to give someone the some type of tip here. And, granted, it's just going to be what script's in your head. So what's the script? What's going down this weekend in your head?
All right, so if you're listening and you want to bet on WWE this weekend, they've already got it set that the Monday Night Raw, the Universal Championship, is going to be Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. That's hard. That's in the books. That's what's going to happen. Do not take a Raw superstar, because a Raw superstar, if he wins a Royal Rumble, he would have to face Lesnar at WrestleMania. They're not going to go that path because Roman Reigns is going to do it. So you want to take a SmackDown guy, and you want to probably take a bad guy because AJ Styles is going to be the one that carries the belt into that pay-per-view. So on the list, you have Dolph Ziggler at +450, Daniel Bryan at +450, and Shinsuke Nakamura, who's 1-1. Everybody thinks Shinsuke is going to win it, but I've got the one that I'm betting on, and I'm waiting for it to fire up on Five Dimes. I actually think Shane McMahon, the boss's son, who runs SmackDown, I think he's actually going to win it and insert himself in an AJ Styles match at WrestleMania. And he is being listed on Paddy Power at 66-1. So for everybody listening, I'm anxiously awaiting for Five Dimes to post their odds. Shane McMahon, Vince McMahon's son, 66-1. I'll be playing that. And then I'm going to let Ziggler and Bryan float around a little bit. If I can get them maybe 9-1, 10-1, I'll probably hop on those two.
All right. You heard it here first. Breaking sharp WWE picks based on Colin's script.
Football season so far back in the rearview mirror. We've degenerated so much.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, I hope you enjoy it. Like, you're legitimately excited for this. Like, all right, let's rank before we go.
All right.
I want to know, like, your excitement level for this, and I want to put it in terms that I'd understand. So,
okay.
1 to 10, I would say for the night before, actually the morning of March Madness on that Thursday is my 10, right? Ooh. So like 10 in the 10, 11 in the morning, right before that full day of Thursday, which I've never worked, went to school my entire life. I had cool parents who would let me stay home, and I never would always take off. That morning that's 10 for me. Super Bowl ain't 7-8. You know, I mean, the Ravens are playing it, it's different. An NFL Sunday, 5 or 6. So those are kind of my excitement levels, like three events to kind of scale. What are yours for those three? And then where do you put this event coming up?
So for me, the Super Bowl is not even a 10. It's usually about a 7 or an 8. I look at it as a gambling opportunity for squares and to bet people locally at parties and kind of take money out of their pocket because they don't know real odds that are on the board. They just kind of show up at a party and want to bet.
Yeah, so mine's really social kind of event too, just social event. But there's opportunities, and it's like, you know, it's fun.
Yeah, March Madness for me is about an 8. I mean, college hoops is not my thing, but I love, I mean, the excitement of it, but I still can never seem to win money on college basketball, so I don't pretend to know anything about it. It's fun. It's a fun event for me. For me, a 10 really is the college football playoff or a monster bowl game that I'm looking forward to, or maybe a Saturday. Like, we had a couple Saturdays where we had 7 you know, huge games going on all at the same time. Like, those are a 10 to me. Those are days I wake up and I'm just floating, or I could, you know, I'm just happy all day. It's like I swallowed, you know, a bunch of pills all day to be extremely undepressed, because it's like the best day ever when college football is at its peak. It's I'm just, so November and December really for me. So that's a 10.
Yeah, I would agree. A big Saturday is, with multiple sports too, but a big college football Saturday, that's like a 9 for me. Also, I love baseball playoffs, like a huge pitching matchup or a game 7 in baseball in particular. Like, there's nothing better than like a game 7 of World Series or a game 7 of NLCS. Also, that's like a 9 to me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 9, 10, because I'm a baseball nut, especially, I mean, the Royals were, and it was a 20. So Royal Rumble for me, I don't know. The Royal Rumble is my favorite out of all of them. I like it better than WrestleMania because it's kind of a niche thing where 30 wrestlers come down. They got to throw each other over the top rope. So for me, this is probably – it's probably a 5. And I don't plan my day around it. I don't make food around it. I don't get on Twitter and tweet about it all day. I don't have a social event. I don't invite people over to watch it with me. So I'll put it at a 5.
I thought when you said I put it above all of them, I thought you were going to say that. You were saying this is the best event of the year for you. All right, well, that's a relief then as a 5. You got your tips. Make sure – thanks for listening, everyone. Make sure you check out Action Network. And like I said, college football. We'll have some more stuff on that next week in the podcast, but Colin's going to have a piece coming out worth checking out. Thanks for listening, and thanks for joining me, Colin, and also thanks to Scotty, and we'll catch y'all later. Cheers.
Peace out. With my mind on my money and my money on my mind. Rolling down the street, talking in love, sipping on gin and juice. Laid back. With my mind on my money and my money on my mind. I got me some Seagram's gin. Everybody got their cups, but they ain't chipped in. Now this-